Chapter 6. 8 months after his explosive appearance on the Carmen Connors show, the media was still finding new ways to capitalize on it. John Sovereign's plan was a favorite topic of pundits on shows both serious and exploitive, and it had been the subject of more than one late-night comedy sketch. As the story went viral, the website had been flooded with inquiries to the point that it had crashed more than once. The Abacus Project had become a hot topic of debate and was considered by most to be either paranoid nonsense or sheer genius, with few people falling in the middle of that spectrum. As the date for the Kestrel Shoshin mining project approached, the speculation was reaching a fever pitch, and finding a new way to spin it was a favorite ratings booster employed by multiple networks. The seventh-floor meeting room of Sovereign Industries had been repurposed as the Abacus Project Nerve Center. Things were progressing, but John Sovereign was a man with strong and true instincts, and his instincts were telling him time was short. He hadn't slept in days, and Mari was trying to allay her fears for his well-being. She knew almost as well as he did that they were running out of time. John was terrifying some of his support staff with uncharacteristically irresponsible behavior where Sovereign Industries was concerned, and he found this painful but necessary. He knew full well the operation of Sovereign Industries really didn't matter anymore, but they did not. All that mattered was the process of populating Abacus with people who would help assure its success. John had some of the freshest, brightest minds alive at his disposal, and several of them had already cleared the grueling approval process and would be relocating to Abacus. John had sent a dozen agents afield, meeting applicants in person and hard-to-reach places. Three others remained at Sovereign Industries, working around the clock with John and Mari, trying to fill all of the 12,000 available spaces. Laszlo Gartz had arrived from the Budapest University of Technology 6 months before, leaving behind a prime research position. Sumit Salazar was a Filipino doctor with a busy but now abandoned Kazan City practice. And Calvin Davis, until recently, had cleaned John Sovereign's office. The table was strewn with piles of files and papers. There were several laptops and a large screen on the wall. Sumit spoke up. John, I'm trying to finish the mapping application. We still haven't named the intake center. She looked up at the screen as she projected a detailed map of Abacus. Yes, it's not as easy when there's no sponsorship to sell, responded Laszlo. I thought we could keep it simple, the Sovereign Center. John shook his head. No way. Why not? It's simple. It's your project. You built the damn thing. I've told you before, this isn't about me. Name it anything but that. I'm tired of going around like this. The place needs a name. Call it Ellis Island for all I care. Sumit looked at him. She knew he was tired and under pressure, but she didn't like being snapped at. She typed on her keyboard, and they watched the name change. Ellis Island it is. Oh, wow. Leave that up for a minute, Sumit. Laszlo was staring with great interest at the map. This is the first time I've seen it mapped out. Sumit pointed out features. 4 quadrants, each approximately 100 square miles. A green village in the center of each, designed to comfortably accommodate approximately 2,500 residents, with another 500 rural inhabitants in the surrounding region. Each quadrant has a minimum of 30,000 acres of oxygen-generating green space. Greenhouses strategically placed in easy access to all via bike paths. Centrally located is the buildings project. And, she stretched to indicate the northeast sector of the map, here are the warehouse complex and the Ellis Island intake center. She glanced towards John, who didn't look up. Good God, the warehouse complex looks massive when you see it on a map. It's almost 500,000 square feet, big enough to contain supplies we may need over time, and also to house and preserve some of humanity's greatest works of art. Laszlo stood with his hands on his hips and shook his head. Fascinating. It has really come together. I mean, I knew it would, but aside from a few minor details, it's ready to go. I can't wait to be there when the membrane is activated. Holy hell, that will be exciting. They smiled at each other. Calvin sighed as he disconnected from a phone call and tapped a few keys on his computer. I need the screen, Sumit. The map was replaced by a man's photo with bullet points. Cal, why is President Baker's picture back up on the screen? Asked John. The chief of staff ordered me to put it up there. Again. Okay, you've done your duty. Thank you. Moving on. Calvin tapped his pen on the legal pad beside his computer. Shall we take a moment and discuss the president's application again? John looked from face to face. No one spoke up. I don't think there's anything to discuss. They are saying he should be allowed in without further testing because he was so well vetted for the presidency. Sumit sighed. Look, whether or not he would pass the physical, the psych test, the emotional wellness test, and the genetic testing is beside the point. He didn't pass the very first hurdle. He failed the online application. He is hostile to evidence that contradicts his beliefs for which there is no evidence. Hell, he's hostile to evidence that the planet is over 6,000 years old. I don't know where you go from there. How can you deal with very real problems when you are unable to even allow your mind to consider that they're real? Added Laszlo. John was frustrated. That's how we got in this mess in the first place. We're trying to create a culture that is supportable in the long run in a relatively small space. We can't. We just cannot allow this. It would be a death sentence for all of us. Nah, who am I kidding? Said Calvin, tossing his pen onto the pad. There is no way in hell this guy's getting in. He's a manfant, muttered Laszlo under his breath. Sumit, who had been stretching across the table for a file, froze. What did you just call the leader of the free world? Well, come on. The posturing, the scandals, the dogmatic beliefs, the disingenuousness. He's the antithesis of what we're looking for. He's an undeveloped person. Manfant. Sumit shook her head and chuckled. It's funny, but it's not. John bristled. Look, I know the gallows humor is a form of coping, but I can't find anything funny here right now. We're talking about a person's life and his children's. He stood abruptly and rubbed his face with both hands. This job is a fucking burden. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. Cal looked thoughtful. What I want to know is why he's so anxious to get into Abacus. Surely he has multiple choices, as far as doomsday bunkers go. There must be a dozen greenbriars around the country. Why Abacus? Does he want to pass in for insurance, or does he know something we don't know? Everyone turned to look at John. He paused and sighed. You already know my perspective on this. The people of Abacus will be the only survivors on this planet, and A. Wade Baker will not be among us. He sat again and turned his attention back to the big screen. But there are others who will be if we do our job. Now, where do we stand? Laszlo navigated his computer and figures appeared on the screen. We have 148 days until go live. We're at about 80% capacity now. We're achieving a wonderful spectrum and a balance of nationalities, better even than we'd hoped. We can take in the neighborhood of 2,400 more out of a pool of approximately 726,000 fully approved worldwide candidates. John heard a gasp from the doorway and turned to see Mari standing there, her hand pressed to her mouth. He jumped to his feet. "Mari, are you all right?" He could see tears welling in her eyes. He gently turned her around and guided her down the hall to his office, catching his admin's eye and shaking his head as he passed so they would not be interrupted. He closed the door behind him, settled Mari on the sofa, and brought her a glass of water. "Do you need something stronger?" he asked his wife, who was trying hard to control her tears. John sat close, stroking her hair and waiting for Mari's words. She shook her head no. He hated seeing her this way. She was a strong woman, but he knew exactly why she was falling apart. He'd anticipated it. They needed to put this conversation behind them, and he chastised himself for not bringing it up sooner. He had wanted Mari to instigate it, but hadn't thought it would take this long. "John, I can't go to Abacus. There is no way." "Oh, I see," he answered, wiping a tear from her cheek. "It's not right. I haven't been vetted, and you know the kind of people I came from. I would never get into Abacus. All those people who are going to die, they belong in Abacus, and I do not." "Well, good thing you have friends in high places, then." "John, this is serious. Please don't belittle me." John knelt before his wife and took her hands in his. He bowed his head down so his lips were pressed to her hands. He paused before looking up into her eyes. "Mari, I built an Abacus for you. You represent all things that are good and transcendent about the human race. Everything I've achieved in my life has been for and because of you. Now tell me that you refuse to go, and we will close up shop and we'll go home together to await the inevitable. There is no Abacus without you." "But all those people," she cried, "how is it right for me to take up a place that should go to someone else? The dysfunction I was born into." "Mari, I understand your feelings, and you are a kind and gentle soul. You are not your family. What happened in your childhood was not your fault. You're a brilliant example of triumph over dysfunction. Your resilience humbles and inspires me. The sickening reality is, so many people are going to die that we can't even fathom the scale of it. And it serves no one to try. We do what we can. You have to turn your mind away from that now. I will not, cannot go forward without you. I need you with me to make this work. You need to resolve this in your mind fully and permanently and dedicate yourself to surviving with dignity. You are going to Abacus, or no one is. If you're fearful for your family legacy, we won't have children." "Yes, well, it's a little late for that." John was confused. "What?" "I'm pregnant. With twins." "What?" he repeated. There was a commotion outside the door. As John and Mari turned towards it, Sumit burst in, her cell phone to her ear. The others followed closely behind her. "We have a big problem, John. Kestrel Industries and Shoshin Tech have moved up the project. We have 30 days.